Casey Hill is not a doctor and does not claim to be a doctor or licensed in any type of medical field. Don't be an idiot and use anything heard on the show as medical advice. This information should be used for educational purposes only, and you should contact your doctor for any medical advice. Now get off me. Welcome to Kick It Naturally. I'm Kenna McEnroe. I'm here with T.C. Hale, author, natural health expert.
Welcome to Kick It Naturally.
You do that all the time.
I feel like you do it so well. I want to be cool like you. She sounds so good when she does it. I was like, I want to sound good.
Well, you know, it's a lot of practice.
Oh, okay.
Tony's little boy, Jax, was just in here, and he's adorable.
A cute kid.
So cute.
A lot of people, like, when they see, they have a baby, they're like, oh my gosh, my baby is just the cutest thing ever. But we're pretty sure we're right.
Yeah.
We're pretty sure we're right about it.
Yeah. I stalked him on Instagram, and he's just, I've liked every single picture. He's so cute.
He's good.
We also have Will Hottie Patati Schmidt coming to you from the San Francisco Bay Area.
She's liked all your pictures too, Will.
Oh, that's yeah. Nice for a different reason. Mm-hmm. You're cutie patootie too. But ladies, he doesn't have anyone right now.
I think we're going to cover this. I'm not sure this is something that he wants to cover every week.
Yeah. We're going to cover it every week until he finds a woman.
Oh, on that.
he's all busy becoming a doctor right now.
Woo-hoo.
So. Woo-hoo. And I can't wait because I need a gynecological exam very soon.
Okay.
Don't think he's going that route, honey. That's
you're not
okay.
going that route?
No.
What are you going to be?
Feet.
Yeah.
Well, I got a bone spur that you need to meet. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so this is part two of gout. Like, we got two questions done last week.
We got very gouty. Yeah.
There's a lot involved in gout, and I just really didn't realize it. So
it's funny too when you read about gout and you'll see all these official things, and people will say sometimes if a person is very gouty. And I'm like, gouty? That sounds like something I would say. Like,
instead
I would say
trout
gouty.
Pout, it's trout gout. If you've got, you know, really swollen feet.
Oh, that's what it's called?
I don't know.
Good.
Okay, they don't all stick, people. They don't all stick.
All right, so we have the problem of us having the inability to shut up last week. So maybe we need to get right to some questions.
Oh, well, it wasn't me. It was you guys.
Right.
So, but if you haven't liked us on Facebook, go ahead and follow us there at Kick It in the Nuts. That's where we post all of our show topics that we're going to be doing. And you guys can ask questions or even pitch a show topic yourself. And we will get on that. All right. Are we ready to dive in?
Do it.
Okay. Here we go. Jenny from Little Rock. Are there any self-test numbers that might indicate how susceptible a person might be to gout? Any imbalances that you might want to improve to reduce gout symptoms?
Yes.
So moving on.
Bye-bye. So the first thing I think is the most crucial thing is to look at your fasting blood sugar. And let's get an idea of where that is. Because that's, with the whole thing of insulin resistance seeming to be a trigger for the hyperuricemia, which is high levels of uric acid. If you're listening to part two and you didn't listen to part one, you're doing it wrong, by the way.
Yeah. Don't start here. You want to start at number one because they give a long explanation, very long explanation
right.
at the
they
top
talk
of
about
the show.
What, the high uric acid levels and all that, and how it seems like the insulin resistance can create higher levels of uric acid, and the higher levels of uric acid can create insulin resistance kind of thing. So I think the blood sugar is the first thing that you got to check. And Will, can you talk about what kind of number a person wants to see when they look at their blood sugar first thing in the morning before they eat anything?
I think, would you say ideal is around 80-ish?
I love 80.
Yeah, 80 is good.
Yeah, like, as long as they're below 90, I'm really happy.
Yeah.
Below 95, I'm not going to yell at them, you know. But 80 is beautiful. You win at 80.
Yeah, it's nice.
I don't think I was born with 80. I don't know.
But there are other self-tests that we talked about even in last episode that are really important.
Let's kind of run down those, yeah.
Sure. So you already said fasting blood sugar. And I also, after I mentioned them, I want to tie in why they're connected. So the urine
Kenna will allow it.
Yeah, okay. I'll be brief. The urine dipstick that measures 11 different the 11 parameter urine dipstick that measures 11 different things, and there's a few of them that matter in this case. One of them is protein. You can see protein on your urine. Another is bilirubin. Another is urobilogen, and also your urine specific gravity. And you can look at all of those plus seven other things all at once in looking at your urine dipsticks.
And all you did was pee.
Yeah.
And every time just y'all say you're a billigen, or I always think of hillbilly. I don't know.
Yeah, but also
that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
In addition to that, also your blood pressure being high and your breath rate being slow.
I think I just realized that it's because Billy is in there.
Yeah,
maybe that's why.
That's probably okay. Hillbilly.
All right. Yeah. Sorry, Will. That was important to clarify.
Instead of hillbilly, it's a European billy.
Billage. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, Will. Sorry.
It's not because of Billy. It's Billy Rubin, which
That's probably, yeah.
Yeah, actually. So it's Rubin's fault.
Okay, it's the Rubin name.
No, Billy Rubin comes from broken down cells, mostly largely like red blood cells, but other cells too that build up in the liver. And if they're in your urine, things didn't go right. Because it's supposed to go out the colon as you poo. And if your bile isn't flowing well and it gets backed up, it can reflux into the blood. And you can see that when people are jaundiced, like their eyes are yellow or their skin turns yellow. Or you find bilirubin or urobilogen in their urine. That shows like your liver is not doing a good job of eliminating waste products, including, and so you're going to have issues with urea because your liver and kidney are also responsible for excreting urea. So those things should be functioning really optimally to help keep clearing out your body out of all the waste products that it's making all the time. It's just part of being alive.
Right.
So that's a big thing.
So, and if you're seeing those numbers on there, that's just a strong indication that your body's not removing the junk. And just to clarify, I think that what Will is saying is that Billy is a first name and Ruben is a first name. Rednecks a lot of times will have two first names.
Yeah, so but when also you do Billy when you Ruben, say Billy Ruben, then I also think of a Ruben sandwich.
Okay, I see where it would go that way.
Which is a high purine protein.
There you go, and it ties back to gout.
Okay, go ahead, Will. Next test.
The other thing, these tie in together. If you have protein on your urine dipstick, or if your breath rate is really slow, those are kind of related in this case. And they're also related to your blood sugar being high. Like, okay, how is all that and your blood pressure being high? How is all of that connected? Well, when we talk about insulin resistance causing a rise in urea, why is that? And it's because when you're insulin resistant and you don't use carbs for fuel well, your body will instead try to break down fats and proteins more. And that ends up producing more ammonia as a metabolic waste product. And your body tries to get rid of ammonia by turning it into urea. And if you're doing that a bunch, you can have too much urea for your filter organs, your liver and kidney, to excrete out in a timely manner, so you get gout. So we want to improve the ability of the cells to use glucose for energy and to not have to make so much ammonia. Then you won't make so much urea. Then you won't have gout.
Right. So you can look at your breath rate. You can count it yourself. It's easy to do. We teach you how to do this in the free 4-week digestion course. And you really want to see your breath rate at a good medium range in that 16, 18 kind of range.
Breath per minute.
The inhales, not inhales and exhales. So if that rate is in a good range, then that's great. But if it's super slow, you know, you're way down by 9 or 8 or something like that, then that's a good indication that there could be problems like Will was just talking about. So another thing, blood pressure is important because if your blood pressure is high, that's a strong indication that your body is not excreting all of the minerals and junk and things that it should be moving out of the system.
Yeah. And same with your urine specific gravity being high, that might be you need to drink more water to give more fluid to like filter out your blood. And it may also be like your cells are breaking down too much and there's too much debris in there because of a catabolic imbalance, which we've touched on.
Yeah. And that doesn't mean everybody should drink more water if they have gout. There's a lot of specific things that you should look at. There are people with specific imbalances that don't qualify to drink more water. They may need it, but they need to fix some things before they can do that.
Yeah.
Another thing is if a person has an anabolic imbalance, which we teach how to figure out in most of our books and courses, then that person is going to be making excess lactic acid, and the excess lactic acid is going to make it harder for your body to excrete the uric acid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to consider too. There's something we're going to talk about with the fat burner one in one of the case studies we come up in a little bit, so we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
So the next thing that Ken is going to do is We're going to look at a couple case studies of people that emailed in situations or talked about them in our support group, and maybe we asked for more questions and more specifics about their situation so we can kind of dig into it a little bit. This is going to be fun. Should All I fix right, my cool. hair?
But first, if you like audiobooks, you're going to love our sponsor. Audible.com is giving all of our listeners a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day membership. Go to kickitinthenuts.com/audiobook to find the link so you can get yours. All right, here we go. Case study. Denise, I am overweight, high blood pressure, high blood glucose, and suffer from occasional bouts of gout. Very debilitating when it hits your knee. Owie, I've been searching for a while for a program that is healthy and I believe in. My PA/doctor wants to try statin drugs again. Though I know I'm not in the best condition, I've managed to lose some weight and discontinue some meds. But things are going in the wrong direction again. I do not want to compound my problems with more drugs. I am down to a diuretic I only take occasionally and a blood pressure med. Need to turn things around. Thanks for all you do. I truly appreciate having a positive direction to go, which you think it's over, but it keeps going. Here we go. My last fasting glucose was 116. Blood pressure runs around 140 over 89, even on 50 milligrams of Atenolol. Is that it?
Yeah, that's like a beta blocker to like, a blood pressure medication.
In the AM, lipids are mostly high too.
So let's cover this a little bit before. Okay. And then I asked her to let us know other questions she might have, and we'll try to cover them in the show. And she sent a few that we'll talk about in a second. But right off the bat, when we look at what's going on here, we can get some indications of what's happening. With a fasting blood sugar of 116, that's way over that 80. That Will wanted to see. Will asked for 80.
I did. What the heck?
Yeah, come on. Comply. but you can see where 116 would be a lot higher. And when you look at a blood pressure of 140 over 89, that's a high blood pressure. But when you realize that it's that number while they're on blood pressure meds, you know that the real blood pressure is actually much higher than that. And part of that is usually going to be minerals in the system, some protein, but it'll be blood sugar and even filth. So since we know that her blood sugar is high, we know that her blood pressure is going to be higher. And these are a lot of the things that we talked about in the last episode that can contribute to gout spells just from the high uric acid levels that are either being created by all of the high blood sugar situation or by the inability to excrete the uric acid properly because the system is obviously overwhelmed with a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
Sure. As if. One thing that's interesting, let's keep going. Let's see what else she says.
Okay. Could prednisone have started all this gout stuff? It sure seemed to cause more problems than it solved. I had a persistent cough, still do, by the way. Doctor prescribed, I think she means prescriptions, and all hell broke loose. Gout, really high blood pressure, 245.
To blood glucose.
Oh, I'm sorry, blood glucose, yeah. 245, that would have been insane. Yeah. High lipase eventually, chronic diarrhea eventually also. I say eventually because I can't verify the dates right now.
So let's look at this stuff real quick. There's a lot of clues going on in here as well. And even the chronic cough, there's a lot of causes that can create a chronic cough, but the most frequent one that I see is acid reflux. And we know that acid reflux is almost always caused by a lack of stomach acid, where there's not enough to trigger that valve to close, instead of too much acid, like we're told in commercials and such. So, but it's very rare for a doctor to know that a chronic cough comes from acid reflux. I've seen quite a number of clients, even a friend of Kenna's that came that improved once she improved the acid reflux stuff. So, what the clue that would give us is if somebody's not making enough stomach acid, what's happening with the protein digestion?
Yeah. I mean, we can look at that aspect. There's so many things to talk about in her case.
Right. But the main thing is the question is that about the prednisone and what this is kind of a steroid, and they've been called glucocorticoids because of their effects on glucose metabolism. And it's super common for blood sugar levels to go up when you're using prednisone. If you Google, you know, side effects of prednisone, one of the first things you're going to find is raised glucose levels. So we talked a lot last episode about higher glucose levels causing the problems of the uric acid levels going up. So could the prednisone have contributed to that? In this situation, I would have to say, why not? Do you see why not, Will?
I'd say there's so many problems that can come from it. I mean, the cough could also come from her inability to mount an immune response when on prednisone. It's an immune suppressant, so you can't really fight off bacteria in the same kind of way. Coughing is actually, it's actually part of the second line of defense of your immune system. It's one of these mechanical ways of fighting germs, of like literally
get out.
Yeah, same thing with like vomiting can be part of an immune response to like a food poisoning. So when you're on prednisone, like you don't get to activate histamines to like kill germs with your normal immune system. So she could be coughing from that. But we want to, and it also totally affects your ability of your cells to make energy, just the way that it's going to impact your body hormonally as a steroid.
Yeah, it's a good way to jack up a lot of hormone situations.
Yeah, I mean, so I think like where she's at, you want to take a very like start at the foundational things that we know she needs to work on. Like, let's work on her liver function first, you know, to help her body filter out these toxins and be able to get rid of urea as part of it, but not just the urea thing. Like, we want to get the whole metabolism back on board. So helping her liver work well so it can start to like eliminate like the toxins in her bloodstream, but also produce bile, get her stomach acid levels back on point so she can metabolize proteins effectively. And then she really needs to also listen to our episode that we did on energy production, like on cellular energy production, and start to learn the connection between her ability of her cells to use glucose and its tie-in to, like, if it can't, it's going to raise ammonia levels, and that's going to raise urea. And it's not just the gout issue. Like, this is a whole life, like, threatening thing when your blood pressure is that high. So,
and blood sugar, a fasting blood sugar of 245, that's for real.
Are you, like, that's dangerous.
That's real, real high. Like, you know, people start going into comas around, you know, 380, 400, stuff like that. So 245 is super high. Let's keep going with her other questions.
Okay. Does tart cherry juice really help gout flares?
So I've never had a client try this, mainly because I like to focus a lot on just fixing the underlying cause. But, you know, one thing that's interesting, and it does seem that it has a good track record for helping gout. But if you think about it, if your breath rate is real low, and you have a lot of those problems that Will was talking about, but also that means that the blood is leaning a little too alkaline and the uric acid can crystallize at a higher level. And if you can push the blood a little more acidic, then it can put the uric acid back into solution where it's floating around more. And so cherry juice is more acidic and can help kind of acidify the blood like some of the supplements that we use. We use things like ammonium phosphate even to help acidify the blood a little bit. And that's only available through a coach. You can't just buy that on Amazon or something. But tart cherry juice could work in a similar fashion. A lot of people think that it's because of some antioxidants that are in the cherry juice that's helping bring down the inflammation. But I think it would more have to do with, you know, alkalizing a bloodstream, I mean, acidifying a bloodstream that was leaning too alkaline and having, you know, the person having a slow breath rate and stuff like that. Do you have anything to add to that, Will?
Yeah, I mean, you can also use like regular antioxidants like vitamin C and E. And vitamin E would be good too in this case, especially with her higher blood pressure. Mm-hmm. But in general, I mean, vitamin E is kind of this, you know, if you have low blood pressure, it can lower it, which can be a problem. But in most cases, like vitamin E is really great. And it's one of maybe the only fat-soluble vitamin that it's hard to OD on because your body just always needs antioxidant. But in addition to that, carbon dioxide in carbonated water could be another thing that helps. It directly, it very directly helps convert ammonia out of like its state and recycle it. So that would be a very good choice too.
And this is if a person's breath rate is slow, like 8 or 9 yeah. per minute or something like that.
Yeah.
Another thing to consider while we're talking about supplements that it could help in this situation would be magnesium, because magnesium can help bring down those urea levels, but magnesium is very pro-catabolic. So if you don't know if you're leaning anabolic or catabolic, you need to do the self-test that we teach how to do in our books and courses to figure that out, because you don't want to take a bunch of magnesium if you're already leaning too catabolic. That could cause some other problems. I think she had one other.
Yep.
Yeah.
Does any specific food, i.e. red meat, seafood, make it worse? Can you die from the pain? I'm sure I came real close.
You know, what's interesting is that she mentioned how horrific the pain was, and now that it's, you know, she only has an occasional flare-up. The first thing I look at is her blood sugar was 245 when she was having these horrible episodes.
Don't you get nerve problems too? Like diabetics get like nerve problems.
Yeah, especially
problems
in their feet and stuff, and their extremities. And, feet, and we've talked about that in a lot of episodes.
So that combined with gout could have been extremely painful. Probably.
Right. But you can see that now that it's down to, I mean, 116 is too high, but at least that's human. You know, now the attacks are much more frequent. So when we talk about specific foods, we'll... You know, there are foods that have higher purines, and you might, you know, see small amounts of improvement by reducing some of these things. But like we talked about in the last episode, what we eat only contributes to like a third of our uric acid level. Everything else is being made by the body for a reason. So the better result would come from fixing these underlying problems like the high blood sugar, and all these other things that we talked about.
Yeah, and we haven't touched on it too much, but one of the things you really want to focus on is, like, why is your blood sugar so high? Like, maybe it's because you're eating a crazy amount of carbohydrates, but usually when someone is on board where they're listening to our podcast and writing in questions, they're probably not still drinking Coca-Cola. And they may have made a lot of change, not necessarily, but you want to look at why is your blood sugar still high. And for that, you want to see, like, what is your body capable of doing with sugar? Like, do you have all the cofactors you need to process sugar? Do you have things in your tissues that are impairing your ability to use sugar? Like, maybe you have too many polyunsaturated fats in your tissues. Maybe your thyroid is underactive.
Do you want to talk about where those polyunsaturated fats would come from?
Sure. I mean, you can get them. The worst kinds are the trans fats, which pretty much everyone on the planet, including mainstream like physicians, will say, like, yeah, don't eat those. And the hydrogenated oils, like the palm kernel oil or the hydrogenated oils that you'll find in a lot of processed foods or candy bars, or like, I can't believe it's not butter, margarine kind of stuff. Like, pretty much everyone knows, like, those are crazy toxic. Like, those are awful. But there's also a lot of misunderstanding about the impact of unsaturated fats, like the ones in like flax oil or regular nuts and seeds or fish or avocado, where we've been told that they're essential, but in actuality, they very much impair cellular respiration and they slow our ability to use glucose. So people are purposely like drinking like really expensive like Udo's oil or unsaturated fat oils to get their essential omegas, but that's actually really getting in the way of their cells' ability to use sugar, and that's what insulin resistance is. So if you're including a lot of unsaturated fats, or if you have included a lot of unsaturated fats in your recent past, that could be a big contributing factor to why you have insulin resistance, which is the, kind of the root of this whole problem.
Yeah, so more than just looking at the foods, the results are going to be better by looking at the underlying problems and working to improve those. So let's go to another case study from a guy from the support group. Oh. And I think his name is Ryan, but he's from another country. I don't remember what it was, so he spells it super fancy.
Oh, but you think it's Ryan?
I think that's how you say it. How would you say that?
I was going to say Ryan. Ryan. Or
yeah,
like
that might be it. That totally could be it.
So can we say one more thing about her nerve pain?
Nerve pain, go.
So glycine is super important. It's a very helpful amino acid to emphasize when you have neuropathy like that. Because glycine and GABA also, which is a different neurotransmitter, will help calm the sensory nerves. It will help restore the regular neural function. And that glycine you can supplement with, but you can also get it from collagen or gelatin-rich foods.
Yeah, bone broth, stuff like that. And I don't think she had nerve pain. Kenna was just mentioning that it's common in these situations.
Yeah, okay.
But I think you're right, Kenna. I think it's Rian. I think that's more
Rian?
Fancy.
Rian? Okay, we'll go with Rian.
Also, with his picture, he just looked like, I want this guy to be my dad. Like, he was, like, just looks so nice. He looks like... Just that the smile of the guy that, remember the dad from Eight is Enough?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I just kind of wanted to hang out with this guy.
Okay, let's see. Rian from the group. Hi, TC and team. I have been on LCHF.
Low carb, high fat.
Oh, okay, there we go. For 5 years and feel great and have kept my weight stable. However, I am suddenly getting a lot of gout attacks and have isolated it to tomatoes, hopefully. What is the best natural remedy to neutralize the stomach and blood acidity? You want to stop there?
Yeah,
for
let's
now?
Go for that first. So we're going to talk about a couple different things here. The first one Will is going to be very excited about, because what I found is that when your body's making a lot of ketones, it'll excrete a lot of those ketones through the urine. That's why people do the keto stick test, and they test to see if they're peeing out any ketones. But what I didn't know is when you're peeing out ketones, it's competing for the excretion of uric acid levels. So if you're really peeing out a lot of ketones on a strong ketogenic diet, it can reduce your ability to pee out uric acid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Okay, so let's go back to something else that he says here. He's asking, what's the best natural remedy to neutralize the stomach and blood acidity? Because you hear uric acid for gout, and people kind of think that, oh, you're too acidic, and they're going to teach people how to neutralize their acids and be less acid to fix these problems, and it's just not the solution. I think when he asked us in the group, one of the other coaches pointed him to our pH, the truth about pH balancing episode, where we talk about how that's just fiction, and you know, neutralizing your stomach acid is absolutely the last thing that you want to do, especially if you're dealing with gout issues, because you need to be able to break down protein properly. So once he understood that, he had some more questions here. So let's go on to that.
Okie dokie. Thanks for the advice so far with my gout problems. I'm now taking betaine HCL with pepsin. I have taken 4 tablets in 8 hours the first day, and there is no symptoms yet of acid reflux. What is the maximum one can take to sort out protein digestion? Second question is, should I carry on with zinc as well? Maybe 1 tablet in the morning and 1 in the night before bedtime. My system is obviously struggling with protein digestion, and suddenly I am getting gout. I have been on low-carb, high-fat, less than 50 grams of carbs a day for 4 years, but the last 4 months have been getting gout. Any advice, please?
So one thing, first of all, there's a couple of questions there. He was taking zinc, and we talk about taking zinc to help your body. It's one of the cofactors needed for your body to be able to create its own HCL. So a lot of people will use Empirical Labs Digestazyme, which is a digestive enzyme that includes a very small amount of HCL, but also includes some cofactors like zinc that help your body make its own HCL. And it can kind of be a boost, so that when you're using HCL supplements, it can kind of reduce the length of time you may need to use it or the amount that you need to use it. It doesn't replace using HCL. So when he's taking 4 tablets, basically we teach in our courses and books how to build up the HCL dose. You want to talk about how we tell people how to do that, Will?
Yeah, well, it sounds like he had a good start with it where he didn't get reflux. A lot of people do when they first start, because a lot of people have bacteria in their stomach. But he didn't, which is cool. So
right, so you don't. That was another thing where you don't need to expect to have reflux, but it's common if there's bacacteria and you're just adding a small amount of acid.
Yeah,
but not enough to wipe out the bacteria and trigger the valve to close.
Right. So with a lot of most of my clients now, I'll have them take D-limonene for a few days first, just to be clear, and then start ramping it up slowly, where you take just 1 capsule of HCL, about 500 milligrams, with a protein-rich meal, and then on the next day, build up to taking 2 capsules per meal, and build up gradually adding 1 more per meal per day until you get up to around 4 or 5 per meal, with the provisos. If you start to get loose stools or diarrhea, you should reduce your dose. And if you are just having like a liquid protein, like a protein shake, you may only need to take like one or two capsules instead of like a full dose of four or five.
Yeah, I usually, if someone has a lot of bacteria, the one or two won't bother them. But I usually tell people not to take it at all with a protein shake, because the shake's kind of already broken down. And if you don't need much more, it'll be uncomfortable if you're just using it with liquid.
The biggest thing about this guy's case, though, is he's almost definitely got crazy high ammonia levels, because he's been on this ketogenic diet for a really long time.
So what we have found before is that there are ways to use a ketogenic diet effectively. They can be effective in certain situations, especially in the short term. And in our book, what we teach is basically a slightly, occasionally ketogenic diet, because you're lowering carbs a lot, you're allowing your body burn fat, but you're still including, you know, things like berries and, you know, sweet potatoes occasionally, that are going to basically knock you out of long-term ketosis. But what we've talked about on a lot of other shows is that when someone's on a ketogenic diet for a long time, and it usually takes a year or more to really start causing problems, but there's a lot of problems that can come from it. And that's kind of what Will is saying with, you know, his breath rate is probably considerably low.
Mm-hmm. And he's probably got very high ammonia levels, especially because, like, right now he noticed he's not breaking protein down well. So his body is going to be using his own protein for fuel. It's going to, you know, in addition to the fact he's not eating many carbohydrates, it's going to be turning more towards protein catabolism, which is what produces ammonia, which is what gets turned into uric acid. So that's a problem. Like, when you do that for a long time, you build up a ton of uric acid, and so you have gout. So the solution, like, even though he sounds like he loves his low carb diet, like, that's I think the heart of the problem.
Right. So it doesn't mean that you have to change your low carb diet. You just might want to introduce enough carbs, and it doesn't have to be every day, because most people that get into a severe state of ketosis, where it's going to be over a long enough period of time where it's going to start to cause problems, they're having almost no carbs, kind of like he is. But if, you know, every few days you have enough to pull you out of ketosis, then you're going to reduce the amount of ketones that you're peeing out and allow your body the freedom to excrete some other things as well. So even if you just had, you know, a sweet potato every 2 or 3 days or something like that, you're still doing a very low-carb diet and getting all the benefits that you're seeing from that. You're just doing enough steps to try to, you know, lift your breath rate, pull yourself out of the problem that could be contributing to the gout of excreting all those ketones, etc.
And, you know, if he wanted to go further with, like, monitoring his chemistry to find out, all right, am I doing enough to, like, change my chemistry, he could get the REIMS testing equipment. That's kind of the more advanced sort of, like, test that we'll do with our clients, or we teach in our coach course. But in looking at your saliva ammonia levels would be a hugely important marker to see. And he could do that with the REIMS testing kits. But that would be, I would think, the most critical one. If he could look at that and get it down into a normal, healthy range, then he would see his gout clear up pretty quickly, I'd imagine.
Yeah, I will say that I think he was in another country. I'm not sure where it is, so he may have a hard time finding some of those. I know the places that we find that sell them in the U.S. don't ship out of the U.S. Because of the shipping restrictions on those chemicals.
Yeah.
If you'd like to learn how to become a health coach, or even just dig into more advanced teachings for yourself or your family, go to healthprocourse.com to learn about Tony and Will's course for coaches. Registration for this course only opens to the public for about a week at a time, so be sure to register for the coach newsletter so you'll be notified when the next registration opens. You'll find more info at healthprocourse.com, and this is the last bit.
We were just talking about that, Kenna.
Yeah,
we just talked about that course.
There you go. Wow. And there it pops up. TC mentions in his book, Kick Your Fat in the Nuts, that you must take beet flow with HCL, otherwise you might develop ulcers. Second question is, how do I know that I'm taking the right dosage of HCL?
So this was a continuation of Rian's questions. I wonder if we're saying that. Okay. All right, we'll just be fancy.
Yeah.
So I wanted to cover that. Taking an HCL supplement is not going to create stomach ulcers. High levels of stomach acid does not create stomach ulcers. Like we used to think it did. Everybody knows that now, that the stomach ulcers are caused by bacteria and most commonly H. pylori. And when there's H. pylori in the stomach is usually very alkaline because their waste is alkaline and they're blocking your body's ability to create HCl because they eat hydrogen, which is part of that formula. But when I talk about ulcers, I'm talking about a duodenal ulcer, because what happens is when the acid leaves the stomach, it goes into the duodenum, and then in the duodenum, the gallbladder squirts bile onto that acidic product, so it neutralizes the acid, and then those acids don't irritate the lining in the duodenum. So the stomach lining is built to contain those acids. It's built to be fine with that, but the duodenum is not built for that. So when you hear about somebody having a duodenal ulcer, most commonly it's someone who is producing enough stomach acid, but the bile was not flowing correctly to neutralize that acid. And as the acid product leaves the stomach every meal and moves through the duodenum, it starts to irritate that and over time can create an ulcer. So I've never even heard from anyone who created a duodenal ulcer when using HCl, but it's just when you understand how that works, you want to make sure you're not that guy. That's why we tell everybody, if you're going to use supplement with HCl, you got to use B-Flow to make sure that you're thinning your bile enough so that it flows and you're not going to get an ulcer. So do you want to talk about some ways of how to know if you're getting enough HCl and how to test out, okay, can I use less and see what happens and all that?
Yeah, I mean, in our digestive issues course, we talk about the signs and symptoms of insufficient hydrochloric acid. So let's go over those real quickly. If you have any of these, then it might be a good idea for you to experiment with supplementing with HCl. So if you're constipated, have low blood pressure, have acid reflux or heartburn, if you see undigested food in your stool, or if your blood pressure is low, or a combination of any of those things.
Or bloating or burping.
Yeah, bloating or burping, right. Those all are indications of that you might have insufficient hydrochloric acid levels. And using HCl, as we talk about in the digestive issues course, where you ramp it up slowly and you monitor like how it's going, and you maybe take D-limonene first to kill off bacteria in your stomach, those can all really, really benefit you. And they do usually fix most cases of acid reflux or heartburn and indigestion.
So if you're having those symptoms and you start to use HCl and those symptoms improve, then you can get the idea of, okay, maybe it's time to start going down with my HCl. If I reduce by a capsule and the symptoms are still fine, then that's an indication that your body may be starting to make more of its own HCl again. There's a lot of reasons that the body stops making enough HCl. So the goal when you're supplementing is just to give your body all the tools that it needs to make its own HCl. So if you start to reduce, maybe you reduce down to, you know, 2 or 3 capsules per meal. If any of those symptoms start to come back, then you know, okay, my body's not making enough. I need to go back up to 3 or 4, wherever I was at when the symptoms were not there. So that's a good way to kind of gauge if you're having enough or if it's time to reduce and if I still need it at all, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, is that it?
Yeah, we did it.
We did it. Woohoo! All right, if you want to learn more about how to look at your own chemistry, you can read any of Tony's books or take the almost free 4-week digestion course at kickitnaturally.com or head on over to Will Schmidt's mybodyofknowledge.net. He'll have a lot of great pain relief videos and some blogs and articles, all health-related, that you can check out.
Cool. We'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Peace out. All right, guys.